Well, now you know a lot about things that will let you create data disks and let you copy files and save files and basically let you fill up those disks with files. But what happens if you want to get rid of something on a disk? Well, obviously one thing you could do is format the disk, and that would destroy everything on it. But let's say that you've got files on a disk. Let's say that monthly letter to the staff we had earlier. You've got January and February and March and June, July, and so on. And now you want to get rid of January because it's a brand new year. You check your disk with that dir/w, and you find January space text, TXT, which was the text of your letter probably saved on your word processor. You also find January PIC, which is your illustration of the employee of the month. You also find January GRP, which was the graph showing the progress of the company. You've got all these things on the disk, and you want to get rid of them. Well, you can use the DOS command delete, which, like the copy command we learned earlier, is part of that command com program that is loaded into your memory when you start the machine up. Because the delete command is in memory, it's also available on whatever disk drive you're logged onto. Let's make sure you're on drive A right now. It's a very simple command. You simply call it up by typing D-E-L and a space, and then the full name of the file you wish to erase. Because it's so simple, you really do have to pay special attention to what you're doing. To erase the file January text, you simply type D-E-L and then a space, and then January, and then that dot, and then TXT, and hit enter. It's quite plain what you're telling the computer to do. DEL, delete the file January.txt. When you hit enter, the disk spins around for a second, and that's it. It's gone. The file is erased. Before you start deleting files, keep in mind a few things. Number one, it is not convenient to undelete a program or to undelete a file. There are separate programs other than DOS that are known as tools to do this. Rescuing a deleted file is a slightly complicated process. It's not difficult to learn, but you got to go out and buy a program, get familiar with it, and take some of your valuable time. Another thing to remember is that if you do delete a file by accident and you want to get it back, do not use the disk again until you have recovered the file with one of those extra tools available. To get off the track a bit here, let me explain. When you delete a file, you don't really erase it. What you're simply doing is telling the computer to remove its name from the directory. The file really is not erased until you save another file over the same place on the disk where it was located. It's a lot like labels being peeled off a videotape because you want to use it again. Even though you consider the original recording gone, it's really still there until you record over it. So if you delete something and then discover that you need it, do not use the disk until you've gotten it back with an undelete tool. Put it aside because the file is still there on the disk until you write over it again. And again, one of the commercial programs at your software store can help you out of that situation. The reason I talk about this is that the delete command can really get dangerous when you combine it with the same wildcards we use for copying. Using your January newsletter as an example, I mentioned you had three files involved. You had the January text, that's TXT. You had the January PIC, that was the picture. And the January GRP, that was the graph. If you want to get rid of all the January stuff, all you really have to do is type in DEL for delete, then a space, and then January, and then the dot, and that wildcard asterisk, and hit enter. What you've told the computer to do is to delete every single file with the name January, regardless of what kind it was, what kind of three-letter extension it had. Now you can see where it can get dangerous. Let's say you just wanted to delete the graph for January. Well, you might think, gee, I'll just type in DEL and a space and asterisk and dot and GRP, and that'll save me typing out the word January. You do that, and you'll delete every GRP file, every graph you have on the disk. If you want to practice deleting files, why not start by making a copy of your DOS disk using either the copy command to copy files or the DOS utility disk copy to copy the whole disk? Then bring up the directory on that duplicate and delete files like format.com and disk copy.exe by typing delete, space, the full name, the dot, and the extension, then hitting enter. Then, using that wildcard asterisk, try a mass deletion of all the files that begin with the COM extension, or the SYS files, S-Y-S. Finally, you can do the ultimate delete by typing DEL, space, asterisk, dot asterisk, and hit enter. You'll notice, when you do that, the computer will ask, "Are you sure?" And if you are, type Y and away they go. You've just deleted every visible file on that copy of the DOS disk. That's the danger of the wildcard with the delete command. Remember, the delete command is available at all times regardless of what disk you're logged on to. So if you accidentally are logged on to drive B and you meant to delete everything on drive A, check where you are when the computer asks, "Are you sure?" Because you're being warned. Imagine the trouble that you could cause if you were accidentally logged onto a built-in hard drive that had the equivalent of 60 disks worth of files. You could undelete them eventually, but it would be a ponderous project, especially if it was somebody else's computer you were using. At some point, you're going to want to rename a file on a disk. Maybe you want to make it a very easy one to remember, and you think of a clever name after you've already saved it with kind of a dull name. Now, for example, the proposal to have the company provide you with a new car each year. You saved it as Idea Text, but really, you want to call it Gimme Text. Well, changing the name is quite simple. You put your file disk in drive A, or whichever disk you're using. You type in dir/w to make sure that the original file Idea Text is on that disk. Then you simply type in REN, that stands for rename. Type in REN, then a space, then the old name with the dot and the extension, and then another space, and the new name, and a dot, and the same extension, and hit enter. REN for rename, space, the full file name with the dot and the extension, space, and the new name with the dot and the extension, then hit enter. That's it. You've just changed the name of the file. You said rename, REN, idea, text, space, gimme, text. That's all. Few notes of caution, though. Again, the three-letter DOS extension tells the computer how to handle that file. When you rename a file, you should use the same extension as before. If you change that extension to something different, you most likely will cause problems down the road when the computer tries to use that file. There are also times when you want to take a look at a text file without having to run your word processor to see it. Maybe you just want to confirm that a file is there before you copy it or delete it. Most text files can be viewed with the command from DOS, type, which, like delete, copy, and rename, is always available regardless of what drive you're logged on to. Type is a harmless command. You can't really change the text in any way. Just look at it. To see that January text file we've imagined, you would simply type in the command, type, then a space, then the full name of the file, including the extension, and hit enter. Now, the file will whiz by you on the screen rather quickly. Shorter files occupy only one screen are no problem, but if it's a long text file, you may even miss the top half of it if you're not quick. If you've got a longer text file, you can halt the scrolling by holding down the Control key and the S key for stop. Then press another key, and the display will move along again. Don't be surprised when you type a file to the screen that the beginning of the file appears as a bunch of gibberish with some odd symbols and wide spaces in between. This is normal because many word processors embed formatting commands like margin and spacing at the top of the document before what you wrote shows up. You just ignore that. Also, you can use the type command to display the contents of other files and even programs with those exe or COM extensions. No harm will be done, but you may get some unpredictable results like beeps and hieroglyphic-like symbols dancing across your screen. The type command is very good for reading things like README files that are contained on a lot of commercial disks. Those are files that often have the information that the manual doesn't have because they added something after the manual was printed. So always type the README files and see what they have to say. If you've got a printer, you can send text from that type command to your printer. It's very simple. You enter type, then a space, then the complete name of the file, including the dot and the extension, and then without a space, the greater than symbol. Some folks call it the right arrow, and then LPT1. LPT1. PT1. That means Line Printer 1, which is tech speak for your regular parallel printer, which is the most used type. When you hit Enter, the specified file is sent to your printer. Let me repeat that again. You enter type, space, the full file name, dot, and extension, no space, and then the greater than symbol, no space, and then LPT1, and hit Enter. The text may not print out perfectly, and you may not get nice top and bottom margins. Type is a convenience and not a substitute for running a text file through your word processor. Its main strength is letting you take a peek at what's on the file without having to boot up your favorite commercial program. It's getting close to graduation time. Now we're going to combine a lot of what we've learned to create a special disk that has a favorite program of yours, plus the necessary files to start the computer and automatically start your program. We'll be doing this by creating something called an AutoExec BAT file. Now, what the heck is an AutoExec BAT file? It's a very special file that you can create yourself, and it's also found on many commercial programs as well. Let me read it to you backwards so you can understand what it does. The extension BAT means it's a file on your disk with a BAT, or a batch, or a bunch of computer commands that execute or run automatically when the computer starts up. Therefore, it's an automatically executing batch of file instructions. Got it? AutoExec BAT. For example, how many times so far on this tape, when you start up your computer, do I ask you to type in that dir/w to see what's on the disk? If you put that command, dir/w, into that AutoExec BAT file, and name it AutoExec.bat, every time you boot up with that disk, the computer would see it, run it, and act just as if you had typed it in right there on the keyboard. The beauty of the AutoExec BAT file is you can do a whole laundry list of commands, and the computer will follow them just as if you were typing them one at a time. So you can just pop the disk in, turn on your machine, and get to work. What we're going to do is create a special disk that will start the computer and run your program automatically. You won't have to use your DOS disk when you use the special disk because this disk will include the necessary startup file. Also, we're going to create this AutoExec BAT file that will tell the computer to run whatever program you choose to put on the disk. To start, you need to format a disk as I've described, but with one addition. When you type the format command and the drive, add one more thing. Add a slash and an S. This tells the computer to format that disk, and in addition to that, to transfer certain essential DOS files to the new disk. Assuming that you have two drives or are going to swap disks, you would simply type format space B with a colon slash S. Again, that's format space B colon slash S. And then you hit Enter. You'll notice when formatting is done that the screen will tell you how large the capacity of the drive is, as usual, the free or unused amount of space on the disk, and how much space is used for the so-called system files. And now, if you bring up a directory of that newly formatted and sist file, as they sometimes say for putting the system on, you'll see a file on there, just one of them. And guess what it is? The DOS file called CommandCom. It's been transferred over to the newly formatted disk. This is the one file that must be on the disk in order for the computer to boot. It's the file that has those ever-ready tools like directory, copy and type, and delete and rename, all built in. Format and disk copy are separate utilities and will not be put on the disk automatically because you really don't need them. Assuming that your favorite program is small enough, you can then use the copy command to copy it and other needed files onto this newly formatted and sist disk. If you get a newer machine with those 3.5-inch 1.44 meg capacity disks, it's pretty easy to do this. Those with 720K disks and the 360K floppies may have to look very carefully at the original program disk to see what can be omitted from the copying, and put the good stuff on the new disk and still be able to run it. Because a lot of space can be used up by hard disk installation programs and setup programs that are really only used once. Also, there are frequently demonstration files and tutorials and things like those README files, which you don't really need to copy. Experiment with this and see if you can squeeze your favorite word processor onto a disk along with the system files. Once you've got a program on the disk with that command com, all you need to do now is type in that autoexec bat file that tells the computer to run it. Let's pretend that you have this program called writer.com and you've copied it onto the new disk. Okay, with that disk in drive A and making sure you're on the A prompt, just type in copy and then space and then con, C-O-N, then another space and then the file name autoexec.bat and hit enter. That's one word, A-U-T-O-E-X-E-C, then a dot, and then the B-A-T, bat extension. What you've just told the computer is to copy the upcoming data from the con. The con, you say? Console, better known as your keyboard, onto drive A, and to name that file autoexec.bat. After you hit enter, you'll lose the A prompt and be looking at the blinking cursor. Think of this as the world's stupidest word processor, because it is. You can type lines of instruction to be included in your autoexec.bat file just like you would type a command, but only one per line. And after each command, you need to hit enter. Plus, if you look up and discover that you typed, say, dur/w as opposed to dir/w, you will not be able to correct that easily. You simply have to hit the Control key and the C key together to cancel the operation and start all over again. Let's start with an easy example using our imaginary program called writer.com. If you're following along with the computer, feel free to substitute the program of your choice for my writer.com example. At the A prompt, type in copy, space, con, space, and then autoexec.bat and hit enter. The computer will be waiting for more input. Now, type in dir/w and hit enter. Once you've done that, the same thing happens again. The computer waits for more. On the next line, type in the name of the program. You can use my imaginary example writer.com or a real program of your choice, but without the dot or the extension. You don't need to use them. You could use the extension, and no harm would happen, but since the program that's running will be a COM or EXE file, it's just like you were running it directly from the keyboard. So you just type in the same thing you normally type to start the program. In my example, just the word writer. Okay, hit enter. You've gotten two things on that autoexec.bat file so far. The command dir/w and the name of the program you wish to run. The computer is waiting for still more input. Now it's time to save it. In order to do that, you're on the third line already. Hold down the Control key, that's the CTRL key, and type the letter Z. This will put a little symbol and a Z on that third line, telling the computer to expect no more input. Then, when you hit enter, the file will be saved. Assuming you really had a program on the same disk called writer.com, or the program you typed in, you will have created an actual, useful, autoexec.bat file that would first display the directory of the disk and then load and run the program. To check your work, type in a dir/w and look for your new file autoexec.bat. It must be spelled just like that, as it is the only program the computer will look for. If you really want to be picky, you can use that type command you just learned to print it out on the screen. Just enter type space autoexec.bat and press return, and you'll see what you just created. Now reset your computer by turning it off and on, or holding down the Control, Alt, and Delete keys, or hitting a reset button if you have one. And when the computer boots up with that disk in drive A, it will automatically display a directory and run your program. I've got one drawing program, for example, that requires a mouse, and I'm always forgetting to run that little mouse.com program to activate the mouse before I run the draw program. By putting them both on one disk with the startup system files, I can then type up a little autoexec.bat file that first says mouse, the name of the mouse program, and then draw, the name of the drawing program. And when I boot up, I'm all set to go. First it loads the mouse program, then it loads the draw program, and I'm working. If you've got a list of things you would like to do automatically, The AutoExec bat file comes in very, very handy. Just remember that virtually any command you need to type in can be run automatically with the AutoExec bat file. The disk operating system commands that I've covered on this tape will suit you well for as long as you use a DOS machine. You'll discover that learning these commands has laid down a solid foundation for further exploration. Whether you've got a laptop or a 286, a 386, or an 8088 XT, doesn't matter. These commands work equally well on all of them. Remember that DOS is a rich and multi-talented computer operating system, and the more you learn, the more you can control its power. Coming up is a special extra section for those of you who already own a hard drive or are contemplating getting one. This will give you more information on how DOS is used with them. Some folks call them hard disks or fixed disk drives. The common term I hear most often is hard drive. These drives are in many computers nowadays and can be easily added to most systems. In some cases, you may be wondering about buying one. In other cases, maybe you've gotten one with your computer and you're not quite sure what they're all about. A hard drive is a special disk drive that is permanently installed inside your computer. It has a vastly larger capacity to hold more files than your floppy removable disks. For example, on my machine, I have a 40 meg hard drive. That means it holds about 40 megabytes of information, files and programs. Now let's put that into some perspective right now, because not everybody knows about megabytes. Let's consider how much your individual disk holds. The larger floppy is probably a 360K size, or about a third of a megabyte. If you've got those smaller plastic disks, they're frequently 720K. That's about 3/4 of a meg. And the high-capacity diskettes now hold 1.44 meg of files. That means that my hard drive can hold 30 or more disks worth of information. And a 40 meg hard drive is fairly common these days. Others can hold 60 or 100 megabytes of information. For most applications, a 40 or 50 meg hard drive is considered standard equipment. The biggest problem with hard drives, regardless of size, is the people who use them. Using a hard drive effectively requires a degree of organization. I'm going to explain some of the ways to achieve that organization using common DOS commands. Chances are, if you bought a machine with a hard drive already in it, or if you had one installed, it has already been set up. The DOS files are already on it, and there may even be some free programs on it as well. Frequently, there is some kind of menu program installed on your hard drive, C, that shows you a screen and lets you simply select programs on the disk by pushing a number or selecting with your arrow keys. These menus are known as DOS shells. They try to protect you from the commands that you've just learned. They try to execute DOS commands in what they call a user-friendly sort of way. Hard disk menus are fine, and you may like yours a lot, but it's good to know how to use the hard drive directly just in case your menu program fails or you have to use someone else's machine that doesn't have one. Most menu programs have an option somewhere to exit to DOS, or leave the shell, as they say, with a yes or no choice. If you want to deal with your hard disk directly, you can use that option, or if you can't find it, and sometimes they hide it there pretty well, you can boot up your machine with a separate DOS disk in drive A, and then switch over to drive C by typing C:, at the A prompt, and hitting Enter. You can see what is on your hard drive by switching over to it and using your DOS directory command. Dealing with drive C is just like dealing with drive A or drive B. Again, at the DOS prompt, you type the letter C, followed by a colon, and then you hit Enter. The prompt will turn into a C, and there you are. Now, just as with drive A, type in dir/w. See if you can find a program called Menu somewhere on that directory, or use the type command that you've already learned to display the AutoExec bat file contents that is very likely on that drive C. It should include the name of the menu program if there is one. I'll be explaining more about the organization of the hard drive as we go along. If you start copying files onto drive C, your hard drive, as if it were just a big floppy disk, you'll soon run into some trouble for several reasons. Number one is, you probably will never be able to find anything when you need it. Think of how busy looking your screen is already with just the files on your DOS disk. Now multiply that by 20 or 30 times, And imagine trying to find that vacation doc you saved last year. Or imagine if you change word processors, you get a new one, and they both save files with the same extension DOC. In that case, it doesn't necessarily mean that a file from one will work on the other. Which word processor did you use for that particular document? Another problem is that when you use the copy command, it will overwrite an existing file of the same name. It thinks it's updating that file. A lot of commercial programs have files on them called setup or readme, and they contain important information. But each time you copy a newly purchased program onto the hard drive, the new setup or readme file replaces the ones that are already there from the other programs you have. That's just the beginning of the problems you can have when you try to heap things onto the hard drive in a willy-nilly fashion. DOS has provided a sensible way of ending the confusion on your hard drive, but to describe it takes a little bit of imagination. A lot of folks use a filing cabinet analogy, but I prefer to think of a hard drive as one of those books that you buy with the unprinted pages. You know, you find them in stationery stores. Let's say that you were about to repair a house, and you wanted to keep track of all the materials and the steps involved in doing it. So you buy this thick hardcover book with absolutely blank pages, and the first thing you do is divide that book up into chapters. One is called Roof, and all the materials and expenses for the roof are written in that particular chapter. And then you write one for plumbing, and you list all the parts and labor used for plumbing repair. Uh-oh, now you need carpeting. So you make up a chapter for those expenses. This way, when you want to know how much was spent for a certain repair to the house, you can go right to that area without a lot of confusion. Think of your hard disk the same way. We're going to create chapters on this large blank disk and then fill them with information. The main directory of the disk is like the table of contents of a book. Each chapter you create on that disk is called a subdirectory. Now, already I've lost some of you out there, I can tell, but don't worry, because I'm going to talk you through your first subdirectory. If you have a computer handy, you can work along. If not, just listen and then play this again when you're at your computer. With your machine up and running, get over to the C prompt for the hard drive. Again, if you have some kind of menu program that starts automatically, there should be a command that gets you out of it. If you can't find it, put your DOS disk in drive A, reboot, and then switch over to drive C by typing C, and don't forget the colon, and then hitting Enter. Everything should look the same as before, except now you're on drive C. Do that directory, D-I-R, but do it this time without the W to see what's on the disk. If you already have any subdirectories on the disk, they'll be listed at the top of the listing of files with the word D-I-R in parentheses. That means that they're really just the title of a subdirectory, not a program or file. The reason you may already have some there is that many times commercial programs create their own subdirectories automatically when you run the program to install them on your hard drive. We're going to make a subdirectory of our own and put something in it. Then we're going to take it out and erase the directory. Let's name this file something odd so that chances are that you will not already have it on your disk. We'll name this directory Tester, T-E-S-T-E-R. The DOS command to make a directory is mkdir. That's mkdir with no spaces. Or if you like abbreviations, you can just type in MD for short. I always use the longer version, mkdir, because it makes me think about what I'm doing. So type mkdir, and then a space, and then the name Tester. Then hit Enter. The disk drive light will turn on, showing some activity, and then you'll be back at the C prompt. Type that DIR, and you'll see Tester with the double parentheses around a DIR for directory right after it. It's now on your hard drive. Again, think of that as the title to a new chapter of your book. But right now, you're still on the table of contents page. To look inside a subdirectory, like Tester, you must move into it. You must change directories, and the DOS command is very simple. You do that by typing at the prompt cd space and then the name of the subdirectory or chapter that you wish to get into. In our case, it'll be cd space tester, and then hit Enter. Now you're in the new subdirectory, although it looks like nothing happened. The dir/w can be used, and then you'll find out two important bits of information. So go ahead and do that. Type dir/w, and the screen will say directory of /tester, which means you're inside that subdirectory called tester, and there's nothing else listed because right now it's empty. We haven't copied anything into it yet. So let's go back up to the top of the hard drive directory, the table of contents. After that, we'll go back to drive A to find something to copy. To get back up there, you just type in cd, change directory, cd, and a backslash, not a front slash, a backslash. Again, type cd, backslash, hit enter. That's your main command to zoom right up to the top of the heap from wherever you happen to be. Let's recap here. From the top directory, you got into the subdirectory called tester by typing cd, space tester, and hitting enter. You jumped out and got back to the top by typing cd backslash with no space and hitting enter. So now we know how to make a directory, and let's put something in it. For example, I know you've got a DOS disk handy, so put it in drive A and log on to drive A by typing A:, and hitting enter. Bring up the directory, that dir/w, and pick a file like graphics.com. That's a nice, harmless one to work with. Now, we're going to move through the steps to put a copy of that graphics.com file onto your hard drive C and in the subdirectory you created called tester. Using the DOS copy command, which is always available, type in copy, then a space, then the name of the file, which is graphics.com, and then a space. Then you've got to tell the copy command where it's going to go. So you type in a C and a colon, don't forget that, and then add a backslash and the name of your subdirectory, which is tester. That backslash tester is important because if it isn't there, then the file is copied to the top of the hard drive to the main directory. Again, that translates out to copy the file on this drive called graphics.com to drive C and put it in the subdirectory tester. One more time, just for fun. Copy, space, graphics.com, space, C, colon, backslash, tester. So go ahead and do that and hit enter. Let's switch back over to C and see what happened. At the prompt, type C:, and hit enter. And once you're logged onto C, simply change directory with the cd command followed by the subdirectory name tester and hit enter. You're now in the tester subdirectory again. So type dir/w and you should see your file graphics.com right in there. And that's really all there is to it. You're basically doing the same thing with the cd command as you do when you tell someone to look up an article on page 6 of the marketplace section of the Tuesday edition of the paper. You're giving directions to a particular place. For now, let's get back to the so-called top of the disk, the main directory, the table of contents, by typing cd and a backslash and hitting enter. Do you see the beauty of the subdirectory? Let's say you've got a whole bunch of letters to your family that you want to keep on your hard drive. Well, instead of having them visually clog up the screen every time you turn your computer on, you can create a subdirectory called Family, copy all the letters to it, and then have a nice, neat display that's not full of distractions. Again, most commercial programs have an install program on the disk that automatically sets up subdirectories on your hard drive. You simply run the program, and it asks questions like, your hard drive is designated as drive C, yes or no? You type yes. I'm going to create a subdirectory called printit. Is that okay, yes or no? You type yes. Okay to proceed? You type yes or no. Answer yes, and the program does all the transferring for you. If you've already installed some programs, look around for some subdirectories and maybe even sub-subdirectories. Just remember that you can always get out by typing cd and a backslash, and then hitting enter. Okay, let's get rid of our tester subdirectory with the DOS command rmdir. That's remove directory, or rd for short. Now, you can't do it unless the contents of that subdirectory are erased first. So you're going to have to cd to tester, del, delete, graphics.com, and hit enter. Then cd backslash your way to the top, and then type rmdir space, and then the subdirectory named tester, then hit enter. Did you notice that I was using computer speak there? Pretty crazy sounding, huh? Problem is, you're beginning to understand it. And just in case you didn't, I'm going to say it again, just as you would be typing it. Okay, to remove that subdirectory and its contents, cd space tester, enter, del space graphics dot com, and enter. Then cd backslash enter, which brings you back to the top. Then you would type rd or rmdir, and then again the subdirectory name tester, and hit enter. That's how you'd go through the process of getting down there, removing the files, getting back up, and removing the subdirectory. Believe me, you'll get used to it, and you'll be happy that you learned about this. Another benefit of using subdirectories for file storage is that each subdirectory is independent, just like separate disks. If you're in one subdirectory and do a mass deletion using, say, asterisk.txt, you only delete the txt files in that subdirectory. You can only affect the files in the subdirectory you're working in. You will no doubt run across some of the super DOS types who will tell you that there are even more embellishments to the cd change directory command. Things like cd with two dots afterwards that will bring you back up only one level. But the things to remember are the main commands. The ones to know are the cd and the directory name to get you into a subdirectory, and then the cd with the backslash to get you out. Also, there are truly excellent commercial programs that present you with a visual reference so you can wander around your hard drive and do deletions and things like that in a more organized fashion. But these commands you've just learned will do the same thing on any DOS machine with a hard drive. Millions of DOS-based machines are in use all over the world. Improvements in design provide more speed, more memory for bigger programs, and more storage capacity. The fundamental commands you just learned will work properly with any of these machines now and in the future. As long as DOS is being used, you're in control. Commodore is the registered trademark of Commodore Business Machines Incorporated. IBM is the registered trademark of International Business Machines Incorporated. Apple is the registered trademark of Apple Computers Incorporated. MS-DOS is the registered trademark of Microsoft Incorporated. 286 and 386 are the registered trademarks of Intel Corporation. My name is John Stuart Socia. The entire contents of this tape are copyright 1991.